Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast, back in the studio.
Yay.
Today is,
I don't even know what today is.
Today, let me think now. Shit.
Oh, boy. It's about to take like...
Put my thinking cap on.
This nigga counting back from the 4th of July, right?
Of course. Yeah,
that's exactly what this nigga doing.
Of course
this
is.
This round about... Wait, BT was a 24, so that... Bad. It was
Lord
like,
Jesus.
That's 3K to 1. It's 28.
Still wrong.
What was it?
27.
Oh, shit.
This nigga did all the math.
Well, yeah, BT. Well, we'll definitely be talking about that on the show. I'm gonna give y'all a little light adventure. It was light. It wasn't really nothing. I flew back from LA last night. My plane. Okay, well, it was someone. It turned out to be someone. So all Monday. Monday apparently the Delta was. Fucked up. Like, people were at the airport for like 7-8 hours.
Word?
Yeah, something.
Just delays, backups?
Delays. And it wasn't weather, because the weather was here, nice here.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. Something, a glitch, something crazy happened. So people were like having like 11, like people from my job, because we all stayed at the Mondrian. We was at the pool, because they was like, yo, they were watching their shit like, oh, my shit now pushed at 4 o'clock. Oh, now my shit's 7:30. Or now my shit's 9:30. Like, so like, I don't know what happened Monday, but yesterday, I get to the airport, and my plane was to leave at like 11:30 initially. Then I got the thing saying it was going to leave at 10 to 1. And I get there, and it don't leave till like damn near 2. Go, because I'm connected through Atlanta to White Plains. Come find out that I told you the story. Some dude in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Jumped the fence.
Oh, on the tarmac.
Jumped the fence in his drawers. Jumped the fence. He's like a kid. He was like 18 or 19 years old.
19 years old.
Jumped the kid in his drawers, ran up to the plane.
And was like knocking on the window. He
jumped on the wing.
Oh, Lord.
And went up to the window and was beating on the window.
That nigga was on drugs for sure. Yeah.
Oh, he was definitely on
drugs. He was on dust. He had to be on dust.
Then he jumped off the wing and sat under the plane. He talking to the pilots.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have been mad as fuck as if I was on the plane, but that's like an episode
just
of Atlanta.
Landed from Miami.
That's not regular reefer.
No. Nah. That ain't no regular weed, nah.
That's not like
that
dust.
You ain't get that from the dread boy.
Right.
Miss Cassie's grandson with the dreads.
Oh,
so,
Lord.
Yeah, so that, I think that threw everything off. So, when I got to Atlanta, I missed my plane and that left. So,
oh,
I had
wow.
to spend night in Atlanta last night.
Damn.
At the Marriott at the airport. So I'm kind of tired. Got to get up dumb early, get joined, then I went straight and I came to work.
Right.
So it was a light adventure. It wasn't
that was a little bit, but that kind of shit, when you've already been out of town for mad long, and then you're delayed coming back home, that's the worst.
Yeah, because I just want to be at the crib. Man.
Yeah.
And then you can't really sleep. Because you got to get up dumb early.
Yeah. Right. So you also have to jump right back into your day. Like, you can't take a minute to just... You can't take any time
day.
To just depress.
Yeah, they gave me a little kit, you know, with a little deodorant. And
a Ziploc bag.
Yeah, Ziploc bag, a little raggedy-ass lotion.
Oh, Lord.
So I'm a little tired, but I'm going to push through for
you. Push through, Jeffrey. Before we get started, I got a quick shout-out. I got a shout-out to Bunny Whaler, who wrote The Electric Slide, or The Electric Boogie. As we all know
Bunny Whaler wrote that?
Yeah, but he went by the name Neville something.
I never knew that.
But
it's Electric Boogie.
He
wrote that?
Yep.
I never knew that.
But he wrote it under a different name. He wrote it under a different name, and he has recently confessed that the song is about a vibrator.
Okay.
Electric Boogie Oogie Oogie.
With the part where it's like some when it, but it's the part where she's like, but she some she the motor, she the da da da, like when it like that part. When I looked at the lyrics, that part makes sense. He said it comes from, he said it was inspired by this chick. I guess he was seeing in Jamaica or whatever, where she was like, I don't need you because I got a vibrator.
Wow.
And it's electric. Boogie. So, you know, the one thing is almost nobody actually does the electric slide to the electric boogie anymore.
No.
It doesn't even sound right.
What's the biggest?
It's before I let go. Candy? No, it's before I let go, and then second is Candy, and that's because of the best man. That didn't start till the best man, because they did it in the best man, and all of a sudden they brought the kid. But it's before I let go.
And what else?
It's just those two, really.
So I got an electric slide story.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Back my
ACM. Oh my God, nigga.
Let's just lie, I was still new in 87. God damn.
Back my ACM. I was living out of Maryland. Mm-hmm. I was out of college working. And went to Club Classics.
Ooh, all right. Know what kind of story this is about to be. Because any kind of club called Classics, I know
classics
exactly
is,
who's
Classics
there.
Is literally this classic club in the DMV. It's gone now. But like, if you ask anybody from the DMV, Classics was the big, it was the shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there with my boy Howie, and they started to do the... I didn't know what it was.
Because it was still pretty new then.
Yeah, I was like, what is it? And this girl who I went to school with... What was her name? I can't remember her name. I seen her, but I ain't know her. But then like she pushed up on me in the club. But she lives in Jersey, and I lived in Maryland, and we couldn't get it together. But she taught me how to do the electric slide on the dance floor in the Club Classics.
Oh, wow. In 1987.
In 1980,
That is the oldest old nigga story ever told on the Pop Life Podcast.
That little gal, we never quite got together, but she taught me how to do the electric slide.
We used to talk on the phone all the time.
Oh my God. Y'all, you was on some you hang up.
Because I ain't had no money. I ain't no car.
Right. And so you couldn't make the long distance happen.
Yeah, she was like deep Jersey, like South.
Mm.
I don't remember that girl. I don't get one. God bless you, wherever you are. Thank you for teaching me a little stop bumping into people and shit. And I ain't know which way to go. I'm stepping on foot, you know, but I got it down.
So, that news coming the week before.
So the best of the top three is Before I Let Go, Candy. Is there another exercise?
I don't really think so. I mean, you can do it to any kind of four time.
Kind of the ones that,
yeah, you can do a line dance to any kind of good 4/4 time song.
Yeah, like, but those are the ones that kind of signal.
Yeah, those are the ones like slide. When like nowadays when those two songs come on,
it's
electric slide time, and then you go into all your other joints. Yeah. You go into the wobble and the cha cha slide and the Cupid shuffle.
Yeah,
and
Cupid
Shuffle will make you tired, though. That shit will wear you out. It's so long. That song's
so
long.
It's so much.
I mean, I love it, but it's long. But it's long.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. And it's funny that this news comes out as we're all preparing to head to Electric Slide Land.
Are you going down?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
I always go down. Actually, I would be going anyway because that's what I do. But on Saturday, as I have more... Well, I'm hosting, they're doing like an emerging artist competition or something. I'm one of the judges.
Okay.
At the convention center. So if y'all are going, Pop Lifers, and y'all are in the convention center around
come
about 4
hi.
O'clock,
or come
holler at
into
your girl.
The show and do a goddamn song. I got to say, you know, we have to say condolences
to Jackson family.
For the loss of
Joe done gone to glory.
Joe Jackson, 89 years, a good long run now.
That's a run.
You can say a couple of days after Michael's anniversary of his death, 9 years ago. So, question.
Yeah.
Is Joe, take all the, you know, the shit. We know Joe had some shit with him now. We ain't going to get into that. Joe going glory. We know Joe was no angel.
Mm-mm.
But was Joe Jackson the best manager ever?
Here's what I think. I don't know if I would say he was the best manager ever, but he had, like, I think some of it was management, but some of it was talent. Because you would have had to actually work really hard to fuck up a talent like Michael. You know what I mean? Or he could have been the best manager in the world, but think about it, LaToya's career didn't go nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, But actually, I think Janet had to change management before she took off. Like, she left Joe.
She left Joe after the first album. Like 82. Like
the Janet Jackson album, Dream Street. Because he was the Janet Jackson album. Because she had a Janet Jackson album and she had Janet later.
Joe was responsible for getting her on TV.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but she hated fame. Like, she hated fame.
But Joe had that vision. He saw
what
it was going to lead to.
But she left Joe because Joe wanted her to go bubblegum pop early. And then Joe wanted her to go like in a different direction, so he was choosing her writers, producers, everything, and that's why Control was Control, because she left Joe.
She left,
she took control of her career and got a new manager and started doing all her other shit. And then with Michael, I'd be curious to see at what point Michael left Joe,
But I think Mike left Joe. The brothers left Joe. I think around. No, I think they might have still been going for Triumph. I think they left.
Well, Joe had a waning presence at a certain point as they got older.
Right.
Not necessarily as they got older. Remember, this was very much, you know, Barry's. This was the meal ticket.
Barry's vision.
They were keeping the lights on for a nice little run there, and so he had a hand in that management capacity.
I think
I think Joe, for a big chunk of that, kind of had to defer to Barry. But I think Barry and Suzanne, I think he deferred to them. And I mean, how were you going to argue with the level of success that they had?
Right.
But I think that he was the one who also, you know, took every opportunity. I think you do have to understand that the one thing that they were phenomenal with was their stage show.
Yeah.
Like, they were fucking on it. Like, and as much as we make fun of the Tito's of the world,
they be on it.
My nigga, Tito gets busy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's not be, you know, Jermaine, he will fuck that bass up. Like, let's not get it twisted.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Right.
They weren't Michael.
Yeah.
But they were not these sort of hodgepodge of random musicians.
Because also, Michael is the only one who didn't used to play on stage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All the rest of them were also instrumentalists.
Yeah,
but I will say, and I'll say the same thing about Matthew, whether or not they were the best managers,
they were the best manager ever.
I think there's a talent development. I think it's more about talent development, having vision, seeing the vision, and developing talent. I don't know if it's about the business decisions, like what Sean said. Some of that is about luck and getting it into the right place and the right time, but it's because of the way you've cultivated and pushed this talent. So I think that's what. Same way with Serena, the Williams sister's dad. It's about cultivation. They cultivated this talent. They saw the vision. They pushed the vision. But there comes a certain point at which, when all of these people went into the stratosphere, like, yeah, Matthew was still managing Beyonce and doing a whole bunch of stuff. But once she kind of hit super...
Albums?
No, she didn't leave Matthew until 4.
Okay,
so he went through a lot. But at a certain point, once Beyonce, it's kind of like...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a certain point where management becomes...
Maintenance.
Maintenance and administration, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is not about... And I've always said this, right? A manager's bones is being made when no one is calling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? And so, for Joe, he put the groundwork in.
Right.
He had those kids out at fucking nightclubs, you know what I'm saying? And getting back up for school in the morning and getting them ready and getting them prepared. And we all know the shit that came with that. And I've always sort of likened him. There were men of that generation, him, James Brown, Ike Turner. Mm-hmm. They all had these very, very cold and harsh treatments of people. And they were able to find talent, or they were able to hearken in on something and really, really churn that shit out. I think it's the same way with like men like Richard Williams, right? Like there's a certain, like, they saw it, they were able to do this. And I think even for him,
and they push it mercilessly.
It was also a point where they realized they couldn't go any further.
Yeah.
They couldn't do anymore. They couldn't be of assistance anymore here. Right.
So, so are y'all saying yes or no?
Yes.
He's the best manager ever?
I'm not saying yes. I'm saying, like, he's one. I say they're two of the great talent cultivators ever.
Talent development people.
Because talent development is a lost art.
I would say Matthew.
But they manage these people, like, for a long time.
No, I would say Matthew, in my opinion, would have been better. Because he saw that shit, like,
early,
my nigga, like very early.
Well, Mike was five.
And hold on a second, but in this particular case, for Matthew, you know, when you really put in perspective, like, Matthew really would, they were living good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nobody was missing any meals in that house.
No, they were chilling. Yeah, nice house.
And he put everything into that shit. Money, time, I'm leaving. Like, he dedicated to that shit.
So, again, so it comes, And it comes down to what's kind of, I don't know if easier is the right term. Because, again, Matthew, again, he was working a good corporate job. He's making good money. And I remember I read that I think he took, he had 100 grand stash. He took it all. And I think, you know, did.
Nigga, there's 100 grand and 90.
No. That's a lot of fucking money. Yeah. To quit your great corporate job in 90, whatever, like you said. But Joe and them lived in a house basically the size of this.
Listen,
room.
There is no motivation. There is no motivation like poverty, motherfucker. None.
And
not one.
Of them, nine kids, right?
You go to bed with a tablespoon of rice and three beans, motherfucker, and see won't you be won't you be out there dancing like a motherfucker. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Poverty's a motherfucker.
Yeah.
And Joe was like, yo, man, we getting up out of here.
Yeah.
One way or another. And I think that there were two different avenues.
My
and I think
two
that
different paths.
And yeah. I think that and I think more than anything, I think he had a passion for music that I don't necessarily think that Matthew had, right? Like, I think so. Right. So
Matthew,
Joe,
I think, was a passion for, Joe, for business.
For business.
Yes.
Joe, so, which is why that those boys' stage show was fucking flawless from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Right.
When you see the audition tape, you're like, this is a fucking child.
Yeah.
This is a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do think one difference is that I don't think that Joe was responsible, and if we're just going to talk about Michael and Janet solely, Joe wasn't responsible for cultivating either one of their brands, like what they became as a brand. Matthew cultivated Beyonce's brand to the point where she still can't break that shit, like, now. You know, that whole, like, barely talking, presenting a certain face to the public, never being out of step, never being
out of it now, but it's taking years.
But it's still, but she's still doing it in a very controlled way.
Yeah.
But all of that came from Matthew. Like, Matthew really controlled her, I shouldn't say her brand, her image. Mm. Matthew really controlled her image and crafted her image and controlled her image in a real way. Whereas Michael, but it, when he started developing his own image, which was when he got to Motown, that wasn't really Matthew, that was Suzanne, and then Michael kind of doing it on his own.
Mm.
And with Janet, that was like once she let, you know, he crafted that bubblegum poppy shit, and then she was like, enough of that, I'm going in this other direction.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But the Beyonce we see, even as she's trying to
break out,
shake
it
a little bit, it, that's all Matthew. All right,
well, God bless Joe Jackson. Let's see, even with his warts and his
I mean, him and Ike, you know, it's hard because him and Ike, I said this on Instagram today, and it's a hard discussion to have in this era where we're having a lot of conversations about if and how we separate people's character from their achievements and their mm-hmm. legacies. But for him and Ike both, it totally gets lost how skilled they were. Like, Ike is credited, or actually he's not credited, which is the problem, but Ike wrote the first rock and roll song. You know what I mean? And like, people, the what you call it? The,
well, people don't realize how big of a, how great of a musician he was. And,
right,
and
because the story is just that Ike was beating motherfuckers' asses,
yeah,
right?
Tina,
so
yeah.
The same thing with Joe. It's like, yeah, you'd be like, because homeboy, you follow him, I can't remember his name, Artemis Gordon on Instagram, whatever, where he's talking about, y'all like good riddance, but tell me somebody else who was in his son's life daily and made him a billionaire. He was in his son's life terrorizing him, and his stardom is actually what led to his early death.
Yeah, and
so
I'm like, I mean, let's have a little nuance when we go down that path, guys.
Like
but
come on,
but
man.
But I understand because there is, you know, I don't want to drag on this too long, but there is this the ends justifies the means mentality with black fatherhood.
Right.
No question.
Right?
They
if
got
you,
rich.
If you are rich, if you are not on drugs and you've not been to prison, then I was a good dad.
Yeah.
No matter how much I, you know, beat your ass,
no matter how fucked up you are, shitted
on your mom, terrorized you, ran roughshod over the house, all of that shit is all negated.
Like the fucking ball.
When you get to be successful.
Y'all went on and did all
right. Exactly.
Right.
And, you know,
like LeVar Ball.
Yeah, well, yeah, them balls. I was saying it from the start.
I told y'all, niggas.
And I'm actually not gloating because I don't want to see anybody be fucked up. But I saw it from the door.
I mean, we all said that.
I was like, look, this ain't gonna work. I'm telling you, Lonzo's on the blocks, the trading blocks as we speak.
Right.
The only reason he ain't been traded is because other
nobody
teams
wants
is like, I don't want to fuck with the dad.
Yeah.
The other two boys is finished. The middle boy is done. He wasn't good enough to make it anyway. And then the youngest boy, who's not even in high school,
Right.
He's not, because of the rules, he's not even eligible to try out for the NBA.
Crazy.
Till 2020.
So crazy.
And he's out here playing with niggas that didn't even start in high school. This is level of competition.
Right.
I predict, sadly, the youngest boy is going to be the worst story.
Of course.
Because he's going to be the one.
Because he's got cut
really
off before he even.
One day and be like, you've really fucked me up. I don't have
before he had any opportunity.
I don't have an education. Now I'm not in the league. I'm 22 and I'm a has-been. Like, I hope, you know, for the best, but I'm kind of leaning towards the worst. So, right. We ain't going to. I don't want to talk about that. let's lighten up a little bit. Did y'all listen to the. Let's talk a little about the Carter's album since we brought up Beyonce.
Yeah, I listen.
Okay, you listen now?
Oh, yeah,
I know you listen. You talking about. So, I've listened to the album, you know, several times now because it's been out.
I need to listen to it more. Yeah, 2 weeks. Yeah. I need to listen, or a week and a half. I need to listen to it a couple more times.
Yeah. I enjoy the album a lot. I mean, to me, I listen to it in the zone of this is Beyonce and Jay-Z's version of making a trap album. It's a trap record. It's what it is. Yeah. So if you kind of listen to it in that pocket, I think it makes a lot more sense. It's trap. It's trap. Beats are trap. She's obviously rapping on every song pretty much.
Right.
It's a trap record. It's Watch the Throne 2. Jay-Z's, I may Watch the Throne 2 except I'm making it with my wife.
Right.
Sorry, Kanye. Fuck you. That's really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you listen to it in that space, I think it's enjoyable. There's some songs in that I really like. I really like Ape Shit. I really like the song Nice. I like the Summer
See, I
record.
Like Nice that much.
I like
713.
I like 713 a lot.
I like Summer a lot. I like Summer a lot. I do like the Ape Shit record. I don't like Nice that much because no. I'm nice.
I love that shit.
Nice. I'm gonna sound like a hater. I'll just sound like a hater.
Won't be the first time.
I just don't need that much of Beyonce rapping. Because her flow bothers me.
Really?
Yeah, it feels forced.
I love it.
It doesn't
it's
feel
white or blue.
It doesn't feel.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I like it. I'm very curious to see how they're going to incorporate it into the show.
Into the show. I mean, yeah. I guess we should know soon.
Very soon.
My biggest thing the day it came out was niggas acted like the Louvre needed the Carters for promotion, which is
well,
y'all.
You know what though? Well, let's say
Jeff, don't do it.
I'm
don't,
about to go,
nigga.
I'm going in. Look, there's a segment of niggas that look are now looking to be and maybe be more than Jay because I know Jay's still on the hated list for cultural
influence
yeah. and exposure. That's what I'm looking for.
But that's different.
Okay. So again, it's not that the niggas don't know the Louvre and know what the Louvre is. I think most people kind of do because obviously it's a very famous.
It's the most famous art museum in the world.
Exactly. But seeing Hove and B and the dancers in there and B with the amazing gowns and all that. I think that, just like with a lot of other things, there's a certain segment of people that will trigger. They're like, you know what? I'm going to go to Paris.
Sure.
Now because I want to go where Beyonce was.
Which is true, but the Louvre does not need it.
I don't need it.
Here's the thing. People misunderstood a couple things. First of all, I'm not saying that it's not a good thing that Jay and Beyonce are putting people on to new shit. That's
like the video,
great.
By the way?
I love the video.
Okay.
That's great. Here's what's not going to happen. When you and your boo roll up to the Louvre all decked out,
you're going to have to
wait in line for an hour. You're not about to go in there and make your own little ape shit video. Like, please don't think you are. And
I
some niggas is going to think they is.
You're going to see something.
Nigga, I don't know. Have you ever seen how many people are in the Louvre at any one time?
No, but you know some niggas going to find them.
They're going to be mad when they find they can't get right up on the Mona Lisa. Yeah, I'm just saying, you need to really temper your expectations. But
probably you're going to see some.
But be clear, the Louvre had 8 million visitors last year.
Oh, yeah,
somebody was arguing with me, like, they're going to have to raise ticket prices to manage the demand. I was like, my nigga, the Louvre has an hour minimum wait all day until, like, the last half hour of business.
See,
like, they're
the
really okay.
Who are getting culturally exposed, who say shit.
Which
like
is
that,
cool, but the Louvre does not need
them. They don't need them.
The Louvre is not
That's
hurting.
The difference is that there are people in this world that have made Beyonce saying, Jay, the center
yes,
of the world.
Of everything.
To the markers.
To yeah. the degree that we really think that the Louvre was sort of begging them. Like, the Louvre went out and solicited.
No, yeah, because where it started was me saying, I wonder how much it cost for them to...
shut it down.
Well, because they probably did it all day.
At 3 in the morning.
But they're still... Yeah. Well, I mean, that wasn't a quick shoot. That shit took a long time. But to A, have access, but B, like, the insurance, you know, like, all that shit. I was like, that shit had to cost a gajillion dollars, right? And then people were like, the Lou probably did it for free for the promotion. I was like, nigga.
Well, that's what it... I mean, that's when you just... You realize and you recognize that you're talking to someone who doesn't really know... sort of the ins and outs of how this works and,
right.
And how any, like, that's not how
any of it
right.
works.
It's the Louvre. It's the museum. You know what I mean? Like, it's the museum.
Like, well, you can't even, I don't even know what insurance you can get. It's literally priceless art. Like, you can't even put a tag on that shit.
This is my theory, and I'm, again, as we always say, I'm talking total shit, because I don't know. I don't work with B or J, never happens.
Right.
I don't know. I would suspect that, you know, they're both heavy in art worlds. Obviously, they have connects, you know, from buying art and being around things that probably got them to the Louvre board, whoever there is running the Louvre, and obviously presented it. And I would suspect that it probably didn't cost as much as you think it
did. No, insurance definitely cost as much as I think it did.
I don't
Jeffrey,
know
you
that.
Can't get around. Nigga, it's the day in front of fucking Aphrodite. You think they're not going to make them get all kind of insurance? They're doing crane shots in the Louvre with dancers. Are you kidding
me?
You can't just be like, we're not going to make you pay for insurance. They may not have charged them a fee,
but
you got to get insurance.
Yeah, there's probably some insurance, but I just think overall, I don't think the video was expensive as you... I'm not saying the video.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about the actual production cost. I'm talking about all the extra, the logistics.
Yeah.
Which
like
is
they, like
the
it's
insurance.
Something that, yeah, it's something that the museum probably
like
had to...
20?
The museum might have eaten that cost, which is, you know, which is fair, right? But they had... There is a cost attached to
it's
it.
A cost.
Yeah, like
that's,
they charged...
That's the point, right? Like
it was... I had a cost for what they charged for the Da Vinci Code. I have to go back and look at that. But they shot that during... Well, maybe they staged it to look like during museum
hours,
but...
And also, that's one in a day. Da Vinci Code, that's probably... They probably would have several days. It's a movie.
True, but they weren't in the Louvre for the whole movie.
I know, but I'm saying, but even the parts they shot, the movie's like, wow, because you got to do different pieces.
Lighting, setting.
So, bottom line is,
it was expensive as fuck.
I like the album. I like the video. I really like the Ape Shit video. It's a trap album to me. It's very summertime enjoyable. Is it the best album of the year? No.
That was my thing, and that's what you got from me. So what Jeff was saying when he said he knew I heard it is that I was just kind of like, yeah, it's all right. Because people on Twitter... We're acting like their minds were blown. And I was just like, it's not, my mind is not blown. It's cool.
Yeah, their minds are blown because it's something that's a little new to them, which is Beyonce rapping, right? And they're getting this sort of...
And the album dropped out the sky.
And that
also came on a Saturday afternoon. Nobody was expecting.
I like the album. I have to be honest, and you know I'm from Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. You know, Jay is,
BK all day.
Brooklyn night.
Yeah.
But like, the content is getting a little, it's getting a little boring now. Okay, like I'm getting a little tired of hearing about how, you know, nobody wants to listen to Jay and there's this
white,
yeah, you listen to the white, you know, it's becoming a bit redundant now, and it's feeling a little like this is really bothering you, dude. And you keep saying that it's not bothering you, but you keep saying like you look like, dude, like this is literally like 3-4 records on the last two albums. You're talking about the same shit.
Yeah.
So that's just getting a little that's becoming a little tiresome to me. And I mean, I get the to me, man, the money talk is like, y'all are rich. I mean, you're rich. Like, you niggas are rich, rich. Like, you live a 1%, 1%.
Yeah,
my nigga. Like, you live, yes, like, that's what I'm saying. You live amongst the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah.
It's like, so it's not, I mean, you talking about really high-end shit is, $3 million watch. Yeah, I mean, okay, that's kind of about what I would
expect.
I wouldn't expect you to not have a $3 million watch or a $100 million crib or
a G Shock, man.
Yeah, I mean, and you and hopefully you have a G Shock, but I'm sure, like a guy like that, like who is one into art, like those are those watches that he buys.
Those are collector's pieces.
Those are collector's pieces. Those are actually alternative investments.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Like
you
keep,
of course, you're not wearing.
You
might wear it to a dinner, to a gala.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. You show it off.
Shit, you know what I'm saying? Like on the crib, you know. So that, and then it was something else I wanted to do. Just mention, I guess next week I'll give you all the Drake review because he's dropping tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So I'll let you know about that.
Which I saw Drake's trailer and whatever.
But you've been whatever with him for years. It's not.
I mean, you know what? I like Drake. I just don't. I like Drake, and I give Drake all the credit for this ride he's had because it's unprecedented. But yeah, I just feel like a while ago he started making the same music over and over again.
Okay.
That's just. But the trailer really. But there was nothing dope about the trailer.
I was talking to my man today. I was saying that this is very interesting because this is the first time I've seen Drake do an album with this little build up.
Right.
There's not. I mean, he's got, you know, God's Plan is a big record. Nights for What's still number one in the clubs.
Right.
So he's got records out, but that's it.
No problem.
And you know, a couple of videos he did though. I'm upset video with, you know, Degrassi, but like, but for the most part, that's it. And then even the trailer, there was no real music in it.
Right.
It's like, I'm not playing your shit. Like,
I think it
makes me feel like one of two things, and I don't think he's unsure because they're not an unsure crew.
Right.
I'm thinking that he must be like, I'm about to kill you niggas, and I'm not even gonna let you niggas know what I got.
Or I think he's just trying to do the opposite because when you got a damn Good Friday listening event every week, what does it mean for you to do
a listening event?
Event. But like, I think he's also just like
anti.
Yeah, because so far this summer, like, I feel like we've been inundated with a bunch of shit, and a lot of which is just like
stuff.
Everything is coming and going.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. There is no plan. There's no rhyme or reason.
There's no sustainability.
Yeah, you just kind of like, okay.
Next.
I think it's smart. The thing about Drake is that Drake is the example artist of this new music business model. He has been ever since like his first mixtape, right? Like he has been the illustration of the move from regular albums to mixtapes, from physical sales to streaming, from like he is the millennial rapper in terms of content. Like this nigga raps in text
hashtags.
Messages and hashtags and memes, right? Which is why for me, I know that's why I'm often ambivalent about his shit, but I get why it connects to his audience. So I think that even now this is part of it. Like what I am noticing with all this shit is that the promo is just like a bunch of hype and a bunch of videos and a listening event and whatever. Like, people don't advertise anymore. People don't, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, how do you promote an album right now? If that's your audience, right? It's different if you're like somebody, but like, how do you promote an album? I'm going to assume Drake is going to do like an SNL. Well, no, SNL is dark. So I don't even know. If SNL was up, he'd probably do TV. Like, that's the other thing. Like, the only thing Drake probably would do is TV, and there's no TV to do because it's summertime.
Yeah, there's no TV during the summer, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Real quick, just wanted to say peace to Virgil Abloh for his first Louis Vuitton show.
Good for him. And for Kanye
Brian Soul. but all I want to say is that we ain't got to get into the whole clothes thing.
You know
what
I'm saying?
But what I'm saying is, we ain't going to get into the whole clothes thing. All I'm saying is, I appreciate the fact that, you know, this black man from Chicago made his way all the way to becoming the head of Louis Vuitton Men's, and you know, which is actually one of the oldest fashion houses in the world. You know, really French, you know, kind of French brand that doesn't, you know, do color ever. And he made it, and he did his first show. I enjoyed it, maybe more than others. But the point is, he did it. And I think that's why him and Kanye was crying, because it was like, I did it. Like, I did it.
Well,
it
I got my happened. Own opinion about that. But I'm let me say, I am happy for him. I'm not, I wasn't crazy about what I saw.
Okay.
But I'm also clear that those sorts of things can, you know, what you're seeing on a runway versus
what makes
it.
Yeah, that's
not
what's going to be in the store.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely saw some things where I was like, oh, that looks, mm-hmm. you know, cool. And then I saw a lot of shit where I was like, ah, that's kind of trash. But, I mean, you know, who are me?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Who's
I'm not.
I?
You know, so I get it and I understand. And I think a big thing was, I think seeing them crying together was interesting.
Okay, so you said interesting. Why interesting?
I think it's interesting because would they have made up if Virgil had not gotten the success that he's gotten now?
Probably not.
That's what I find very interesting, right? Because
Kanye needs him.
Off-White was popping.
Is popping. I'm just,
well,
I
mean, what I'm saying is,
yeah, he's doing
it. It was popping for a while.
Yeah.
And he never really acknowledged, connected, gave props to, gave love to, showed any sort of, you know, admiration to his friend, seeing him be successful. And when Virgil really becomes accepted by white folks, and appreciated and adored by the folks that Kanye wanted that adulation from, it was almost like this, now we can reconnect. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, look.
Because now you're valuable to me again.
Exactly, right? And I can use this as a springboard to show that I can really see and vision, I can see visions and talent, right? And again, I don't know them, right? But that nigga's kind of showed his colors, you know, and who he is and what it is. So I just thought it was interesting. I don't think it was forced, but yeah, I think that there was some reflection.
It came from a place
of reflection that, oh shit, like, and he did this shit without me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think Kanye's going through a bit of an identity crisis.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, nigga, you are 40. Like, embrace it. Let it be. What's going to be. With
children.
Three whole ass
little
children.
Young kids.
Yeah.
Too.
You are 40. You are married. You have three kids.
Yeah.
And, like you said on the show before, he's not at the top anymore. He doesn't know how to deal with that. Like, there comes a time for every artist. And all of us have been in this. All three of us have been in this game long enough to know it. Even if you are still really great at your craft, there's always somebody who's coming behind you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pass the baton at some point. You cannot be selfish about that.
It's only me.
Yeah, like, you can still do what you do at your level, but there's always going to be hotter, newer, you know, latest, hottest, whatever. And if you can pass the baton graciously, you survive out here. You know, if you're still trying to keep up with the young bucks, that's when you actually age yourself out. And I think that's where Kanye is right now. Like, I think as a producer, he's letting himself grow and mature. But as an overall artist, rapper, and everything, he's holding on too tight.
Yeah.
I think even in the fashion world, like, nigga, you got motherfuckers out here in biker shorts and torn sweat. Like, what's fly about that?
Yeah, nothing.
There's nothing fly about what you're doing.
Yeah.
At all. Like, there's nothing creative about it. There's nothing fly about it. There's nothing new and original about it. Kim be out here looking foolish as fuck.
Kim be looking crazy.
Foolish. Like, just crazy. Because she's trying to ride for you.
God, yeah
and, crazy. Like, you look crazy. Like, nothing about that is hot, Ma. Like, you got on all kind of different fanny packs and bike shorts. Like, you look like it's 1987. It was flyer back then, even.
Wow.
So, it's like, I think that Kanye really needs to... If Kanye would just embrace a little bit of, like, an elder statesman type situation, a big brother situation, for real, realize that he's on the other side, not my big brother was Big's brother, but like, you the big brother now, it would go a lot easier
homie.
For him. Yeah, you're a big homie now, nigga. Like, let the shit go.
Yeah.
It would go easier for you. And I think that's part of the Virgil thing, is like, he can't accept that, like, other motherfuckers who he thought he was putting on have, like, surpassed
him.
By way past him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, yeah.
Out
here shocking and amazing.
Who shocked Democratic incumbent Joe Crowley for the 14th district, Congress's 14th district. She's a socialist, actually, mm-hmm. Democratic socialist. And she beat him, and she beat him, you know, handily.
Yeah, like for real, for real.
Wasn't even close.
No corporate, no corporate endorsement.
Yeah, she's only 28, right? She's 28 years old. She's young. And I mean, I'm happy, you know, for a young person to getting her shot. But my point for bringing this up was the bigger point to me is she is kind of like the blueprint of what the Democratic Party should be trying to do.
Right, instead of all these old motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's like, yo, y'all still talking about running Bernie and, you know, Joe Biden, who I fucks with, but he'll be like 75 by that point. Like,
and Bloomberg's coming back.
Yeah, Bloomberg. And, you know, it's like, yo, man, like, there's a whole cast of young voters out here, but mm-hmm. young voters are not on the Democratic side. I don't know what the hell they're doing on the other side. On the Democratic side, all these young voters are really not trying to line up behind their grandparents to vote for them.
Right,
they want somebody who's closer to their brother. Now, 28 is extremely young, so you can't. She's not even old enough to run for president if she wanted to. But but like, you know, I think that was obviously one of the
And if she wins, she will be the youngest person elected to Congress.
Yes, yeah, even 30.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the reasons. One of the things obviously that attracted young people to Obama was that he was when he first got elected, he was in his 40s.
Right.
You know, he's a young guy. The kids were pretty young at that point.
Like, and it was a fresh perspective.
It was a fresh perspective. He's a younger guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, you know, 20 is around the corner.
Right.
18 is here. Like, midterms 18 is here. Up,
and we're not ready.
In about 3 months.
We're
and
not
nobody's
ready.
Prepared.
Yeah.
And it's like, yo, like, but I will say this to the other side. Because of all the super heinous shit that the Republicans are doing, is like literally turning into Nazi Germany. There are Democrats that are winning races that they're beating the GOP just because people are like, I can't
do it.
I can't fuck with you. When I was in Atlanta last night, I saw a commercial for a guy running for Congress. He said he's a straight Trumpist. He's in the commercial with a shotgun on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a shotgun on his shoulder. Like, yeah, like, I don't know, it's Georgia, the guns thing looks like. Yo, like, so, I don't know, it just feels like the Democratic Party is not fully
Well, because the Democrats, the Democrats...
It's organized in pockets.
Well, that's the thing, like, the left is fractioned. And because there's progressives, there's socialists, and there's Democrats.
Like, and nobody on the left wants to, not sorry to cut you off, nobody on the left seems to want to, except for,
fight
God
dirty.
Bless her, Maxine Waters, Auntie Maxine, nobody wants to just fight fire with fire.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, all the civility shit is bullshit because you being civil, all they're going to do is run over you.
Yeah.
They scumbags.
And that's how the GOP has gotten as far as they've gotten already.
Because they don't play
it's because
rules.
We
they're
play.
Like, fuck
it's because
niggas.
We try to keep playing nice.
And they keep
and keep moving the goalposts.
And it's really a fake nice, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a nice for optics' sake. It's
right.
Not a nice because we, you know, legitimately feel like that.
Yeah.
And it's
stupid.
It's bullshit. Like the nice, they fucking stole a justice seat.
Yeah, like
dude,
literally
they stole that shit.
Dude, yeah. They stole 2,500 children.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just...
I'm saying, how heinous they are. They stole justice seat. They stole children. They left 4,000 people to die in Puerto Rico.
I feel like the last year, I feel like I have to now, like, almost go back and take a civics class again. Because I feel like, am I bugging out here?
Yeah.
Or is this how this shit is supposed to work? Because whatever happened to checks and balances, like this motherfucker is just signing executive order after executive order and no one
except
is raising
Maxine
the
Waters.
Alarm. I know I'm saying no one outside of Maxine is raising the alarm and banging a pot or a pan and saying, yo, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. And now Maxine's raising her hand as she's been doing.
And they're
even
like,
Democrats are like, oh, she's going too far.
She's
telling motherfuckers, look, these people are pieces of shit. So if you see them out, let them know you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And these motherfuckers are like, no, you gotta let Sarah Sanders eat in peace. She's a scumbag. She lies to people.
But this is all
daily.
But this is all a part of the game.
But that's the thing. White people are always more concerned about... I'm sorry, Sean. But white people are always more concerned about optics than action, which is why calling somebody a racist is now more offensive than actually doing racist shit.
And that's a part of, you know, these folks, they want to behave a certain way at work and they want to disconnect. Yeah. They want to act like the shit that they do at work is like packing boxes. Yeah. They acting like they're working at the Walmart.
I'm on the job now. I'm chilling.
I'm off the clock, so leave me alone. Yeah.
Everything is packed on the shelves. Yeah. There ain't nothing in the back. Yeah. So I'm done, right? And it's like, yo, dude, no, you don't get to do that.
Yeah.
Okay? Unfortunately, there are pros and cons to this shit. The pros are that you get all of this access and you get all of the shit that you're able to get when you work for the government. Well, guess what? Here's the fucking con. The con is you don't get to get off the clock.
Yep.
You know what? And people get to make your life uncomfortable. And they have used civility as a shield to protect themselves in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they have shamed Democrats. They have shamed people who wanted to voice their opinions and voice their displeasure with them and made people feel like they're doing something wrong. No, we're not doing something wrong. You know what? If you want to go out, you want to eat at nice restaurants, do the right fucking thing, okay? Because plenty of Republicans before you guys have gone out and eaten at restaurants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay?
Without being harassed.
And you know, Sarah, she stands up there like, and we know you're fucking lying. And you know what? And it's not even just her. I'm fucking sick of the press. Like, no one says those words.
Yo,
If they had said them back during the election, we might not be here.
For somebody to say, yo, what the fuck are you talking about, fam?
And
somebody did it last week, and yeah, she wouldn't did, yeah. answer him. But, like, he had his foot on her neck.
And then you even had the intern, yo, Mr. President, fuck you. Like people are like, oh, she's on the orders. I said, yo, think about it. This girl, I don't know if she's a black or white girl. It doesn't really matter. But some young girl went through this rigorous process to become a White House intern.
It's hard as fuck to
become a White House intern. Your grades and recommendations and blah, 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 blah. And she's in a place, I'm sure she must be like, I'm assuming like a political science major or something like to do with, you know, with something she wants to do.
Right.
As a career. And she gets into the White House. And it's so heinous. And we don't even know what she's seen. We don't know what she's seen, too.
It's inside.
And the things she's hearing. And it got so bad that she actually yelled out, fuck you, to the president. It's like, yo, think about how far she had to be pushed to the ledge to do that, knowing that it could probably will jeopardize her internship. Think about that. She's this 18, 19-year-old girl who saw so much fucked up shit. And she had to try to curse this dude out.
I hope that the people who have sat idle as this, you know, shit has taken place, and what I mean by that is the hacking and all of the other shit, and I hope you motherfuckers go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope the people that don't go to prison, I hope you fucking souls burn.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I hope you guys live with this shame for the rest of your fucking days.
Mm-hmm.
And every day is uncomfortable for you because it is mind blowing. And again, like I said, I legitimately feel like I need to go and take a civics class because I cannot fathom what is happening right now and why everyone is so quiet.
Yeah. Yo, I saw Rachel Maddow tweeted today that apparently, I think it was in New York actually, one of the kids that they stole from their family, that's what I'm gonna call it, he was trying to jump out the window because he's so distraught that he doesn't know where his parents are. He doesn't speak English. He's in his country. He's in New York. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. And they said there's been other kids too that are like really, not surprisingly, really mentally damaged. Like, these kids are like literally like bugging the fuck out. Like, yo, you put me on a bus. They put them on a bus and drove them from fucking Texas to New York on a bus, not knowing where they're going.
That's crazy.
And dropping off in East Harlem, like, yeah, y'all just chill here. Like, this shit is
crazy.
This shit is heinous, man. Yeah. And people like civility.
Fuck what? Yeah,
they want they, that's
but
the
also
point.
The GOP. Ever since the Tea Party, they have just been openly nasty.
And racist.
So the fact that we're supposed to be like, come on, the fact that we're supposed to be civil in the face of how ugly, like, first of all, our president is the least civil person
in the world.
Like, he's the least civil public figure I can remember
ever
in my lifetime.
Yeah.
for sure, right?
And Stephen Miller behind him is
yeah.
Worse.
So if that's our actual president, you want me to fucking be civil in the face of that? And you know what? The reason they can advocate for that shit is because most of the stuff that's going on, even as y'all fight for your constituents and you do whatever, it's not touching you.
Exactly.
It's not touching you. So part of it is still abstract yes. to you. And so it's real easy for you to get up there and preach about it because you care about your constituents and shit, but it's still abstract to you.
Yeah.
And the motherfuckers who are actually being affected by it, it's literally a fight for our lives out here. And you like be civil? Fuck you, man. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah. It's horrible, man. So, I mean, I wanted to just bring that up. This shit is fucking horrible, man. Pose.
I love it. It's the best shit.
You been watching it, bro?
Oh my God.
I haven't. And you know my whole thing is when I missed that first episode.
You only three in now.
I know.
You're not that far.
I got to binge like this weekend.
Yeah, you catch up.
I fucked up because I binged on Luke Cage the last couple.
I haven't watched
Luke Cage. It's four. It's four episodes.
So Pose is. We talked about it
before.
Yeah. On FX. It's a show about '80s New York. I guess transsexuals, is that the right term?
Well, it's about ballroom culture. It's about ballroom culture, first and foremost, but it's also a story about LGBT and trans.
Exactly. Yes. But what Ryan Murphy has done, along with his team of writers and producers and directors and so on, what he's done is, I mean, there is there is a bit of homosexual
storyline.
Not even storyline. Kissing scenes and shit.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know what the term looking for. But there's a little bit of that. It's not crazy, but there's a little bit
of it. There's love scenes, yeah.
There's some love scenes. But what he's done, because we're on three now. F3? Four is the next one.
No, we just have four.
Is it been four?
Yeah. Okay.
What he's really done, this guy is great, because he's really developing these characters to
the point
now where you don't even think about them being transsexual.
Right.
You're just watching their stories unfold.
Right.
It's not, you're not even
tripping. Well, that's the point. Like, they're just, it's like, it's a human story. Yeah.
But like, even like, there's like, I guess three or four transsexuals that are main characters, right? Four, maybe? Or five?
One. There's three that are like the primary, the real main characters.
Electra,
so Electra, Blanca, and Angel.
And that's the one with the curly hair.
And Angel.
And now you've got.
And they're all transsexuals in real life.
Yeah. I think everybody is. And then.
Yeah.
All the ones. Yeah.
And then you got
Electra. Oh, no, you said Electra.
And
right?
then, yeah. And then you got Candace.
That's the dark skinned woman.
That's the dark skinned woman. Yeah. So she's also transsexual. So she's like a second. I guess secondary
character.
But
she's starting to get a story developed.
Yeah. Too. Her story's being developed. Yeah, and then there's a couple of other ones.
Yeah. But those are the main ones. And then. Yeah.
Then you have Pray Tell.
Billy Porter.
Billy Porter, who's Pray Tell.
Yeah, who plays the ballroom?
Do you call it MC or what do you call
MC
him?
Host kind of thing? And then you have the kid who's the dancer and his relationship. Like it's really well. And then you have Blanca's boyfriend.
Yep.
The white guy who's kind of playing
Angel's boyfriend.
Angel's boyfriend, right, who's kind of playing the guy who's kind of working for a Donald Trump type character.
No, he's working for Trump.
Yeah, but I'm saying the boss is a Trump type.
I know,
guy.
But he literally works for Trump in the show.
Yeah, no, Trump is the company.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, but his boss, Jake Vanderbeek, is Trump-esque.
Yeah, he's Trump-esque. Yeah.
So I mean, but again, it's been amazing to see how it's developing, and now I watch it because I'm really like invested in these.
It's
characters,
good,
man.
And like the music, whoever the music soup is on this show is phenomenal.
I
want to
know the budget because they are getting cues that are. That Janet Jackson.
Yeah, like they're hitting all of
The music is great.
The music is amazing.
Yeah.
Whoever the music soup is on this shit is outstanding.
I haven't done the summer yet, which I'm surprised at.
Are you sure? Well, this is
I don't
eight.
Remember it, maybe.
Maybe, but this is supposed to be like late 80s?
Mid. Donna
probably
mid.
Is it still mid? Okay.
Yeah, Donna was still around.
What? I mean, but Disco it wasn't was
like,
over.
Yeah, it wasn't like,
yeah,
she wasn't
Bad
popping.
Girls, all that shit was like 82.
Was
like,
no, nah. Bad Girls was 79.
Was
boom.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in, I think Pose is like 86, 87.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Donna was
on her way out.
Donna was on her way down. But, and it's shot beautifully.
Yeah.
I mean, the cinematography
and
is excellent.
You know, I don't know how they do it, obviously, in CGI, but like, there's an area that they go to pretty much with every show at some point.
In Hunts Point. It's supposed to be Hunts Point.
Is that what it is?
I think it's supposed to be Hunts Point. Because
the,
they're in
the Twin Towers.
Oh, okay.
If you look, the Twin Towers are there.
Because
I'm like,
they're
that's crazy.
They're supposed to be in the Bronx. So I think
they're uptown.
Yeah, so I think that's supposed to be Hunts Point. Because remember, Hunts Point used to be...
Yeah, it was disgusting.
The spot, yeah.
Like, in the last couple years. Which is also funny. I look at the... Where what's the one to call her name again?
Angel.
No, not her. The mother.
Blanca. Blanca.
Like, I look at Blanca's apartment where they're living. I'm like, right now that apartment's like $3,500 a month.
That apartment is up, because that apartment is huge.
It's massive.
It's huge and it's spacious.
Yeah.
And I was looking at that the same way. I was like, shit, I could fucking live there.
That apartment is like, kind of nice.
Yeah, I'm like, that shit is hot. Like, I could throw some paint on this bitch.
But I really enjoy the show. I really
it's
enjoy
great.
The show.
It's
I don't know
great.
What the ratings
it's
are
great.
Doing, but I really
it's,
enjoy.
I mean, I don't know what it's doing because it's on FX.
They declined the last. Since the first episode.
I could see, because you know what, it's
well, it's also on Sunday night. Sunday night we got this, we got Claws, we got Westworld. Westworld just ended. Westworld just had its season premiere. Real Housewives. But I mean, Real Housewives is kind of at the bottom, because it's, well, not at the bottom, I don't know where Claws ranks, but I think what was really going up against it, the NBA finals were going up against it for a minute, right?
Yeah.
Westworld, like I said, just had its season finale. Westworld was going directly up against it. There's something else that comes on Sunday night, too. What is it? But like I said, there was also, now Claws is back as well.
So there's a lot
of that's
shit.
Going up. So yeah, there's a lot of Sunday
night
programming.
And also, you know, it's a very New York-centric show. New York in the 80s, too. It's not like New York now.
True.
The New York that people in the country now don't know.
Don't know and don't
years
like.
Ago.
Yeah.
And don't like. And the characters obviously are transsexual and homosexual.
Yeah.
So it was going to be a very niche thing. But I'm hoping that Ryan Murphy, being who he is, and FX, you know, they'll definitely give him another season.
Yeah, and FX does niche programming anyway.
Arty.
Yeah, they do niche and risque and edgy programming. The funny thing is, they're so good at this, at set design and stuff. They were on My Family's Block in Harlem in this episode. They were on Hamilton Terrace, which is a landmark neighborhood. When they were going to see the chick about the shots.
That was Hamilton Terrace?
That was Hamilton Terrace. Hamilton Terrace ain't never looked like that. It ain't even look like that in the 80s. But obviously, like, they had to, you know, make
dress
it look
it
whatever.
Mm.
But I was looking and I was like, that is funny. Matter of fact, they were like maybe one house down from my house.
Wow.
So I was like, yo, that's really Hamilton Terrace. Like, I could see the Alexander Hamilton house in the background since they moved it to the park, because, you know, you can see it in the park and everything, and like the ivy and all of that. And I was like, yo, they're on Hamilton Terrace, which was still was always been a landmark neighborhood forever, so it didn't look like that in the 80s, but they had really like totally
dressed
transformed
it.
Their
set production is amazing.
The flaw I caught was in this past episode, Electra was in the hotel room with her suitor or whatever, and they had the new Condé Nast building in the background. But obviously, you can't
you
do nothing about that.
Building.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, you know, if you're not watching the show, like, it's
you
really
should.
Good.
It's
really
excellent.
Really good.
And I also want to. Did we talk about Anthony Bourdain?
No, because we missed that week.
Okay, so I also just obviously want to give, you know, a shout out to RIP. We talked about Kate Spade, though.
Dude, we must have talked about
Bourdain. We must have talked about Bourdain.
Yeah. We wouldn't have
Died
2 days apart, didn't they?
Yeah, we did. We talked
about Bourdain, too?
Yeah.
I was wondering if maybe it was Kate, and then we taped, and then it was Bourdain. But at any rate, I think we all talked about Kate. But anyway, I just wanted to, if we didn't, you know, rest in peace, obviously, to Anthony Bourdain. But CNN started running Parts Unknown. Well, there were still new ones in the can. Like, he was mid-season.
Okay.
But they've been running Parts Unknown, like, on a loop. And I think it's now, the whole thing is on CNN.com. And if you've never watched it, it's an amazing show. Because the thing about, you actually would dig it, Jeff. Because the thing about Bourdain is that people know him as a celebrity chef. But this was really more of a travel show. And, like, he even did Queens, and he did Houston.
I saw the pictures when he was a
right.
Slim Thug.
But he went and got barbecue with Slim Thug. He was asking Slim Thug, and they talked about car culture. They talked about syrup. Mm. He was asking Slim Thug, like, you went to L.A., you came back. Like, what's different about Houston? Like, now Houston's a big city. What's different? Yeah, but then not only did he hang out with Slim Thug, like, he also, like, went to an ESL class. He also went to a Kinsera. He also, like he hits all the pockets of culture, because the story about Houston was really a story about immigration and the changing face of the country, because Houston has so many different ethnicities.
Really, really multicultural.
And he hits all of them. Or like the one he did about Queens, it was about like the food trucks and all the different, you know, elements like how Queens is one of the only cities in America where you can get this many different types
also
of food.
Super multicultural.
Yeah, and super multicultural. Mm. And but also was like at some hole in the wall spot. What I want to say, maybe like at some Nigerian spot, but was also talking to a fellow food writer, like, do you worry that by celebrating this culture, you're destroying it? I worry about that a lot. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
knowing, like,
I've
by
read
putting
about
people
him is people really liked him because he, when he would go to places of other cultures, he definitely always went as a guest.
He went as a straight up guest.
He wasn't in there like, yo, you should do this. I he would like really be like asking questions and like break and like watching grandma cook. Like,
yeah, like he
like,
goes to
real,
people's
like,
homes.
Yo, like, oh
yeah.
Shit, like, how do you do that?
He goes to people's homes.
Yeah.
He eats anything, right? And then, like you say, he'll ask, but actually, I think in this last season, he even said something like, y'all have been complaining because I'm not describing food the way I used to. Like, all you need to know is this shit is good. Like, he was like, how much? He's like, there's only so many ways you can describe food besides me telling you what's in it, right? But, like, he'll go to places, and he'll go to the flash it. Like, he go to, like, he went to France, and he'll do the flash it, but he's also like, what's the local shit? What's the hole in the wall shit?
Regular people.
And what's the context around it, right? Like, how he talk, he really looks at food as a connection to history and culture and a connection to the people. So when you're watching his show, I think it's so important for those of us that like to travel because, like you said, he shows you how to travel to someplace else and how to absorb someone else's culture, how to be a gracious guest. And like you said, the questions he asked, like you can tell, first of all, he and his producers have researched, but he gives you context. Like he goes to Beirut. The last time he was in Beirut was for his last show and literally like the war broke out while they were taping. So he goes back to Beirut and he loves Beirut, but he's telling people like, I realize it must sound crazy for me to be like, I love it here when you know, you guys are in like a war regime.
That's what was the call show was, sounds similar to that, Eddie Hung, the guy who did make the Fresh on the Boat. He had a show on Vice. I think it might be done because I haven't seen him.
And I also,
but he had a show. He would travel to like far-reaching places and like do the same thing. He like eat food, and he definitely would be a guest, and he would be like, "Oh man, this spice that they use." Like he was really like into it. You know?
What's his name? Show the rapper, the Fuck Yeah, That's Delicious.
Oh, Action Bronson.
Action Bronson's show is a little bit like this too, but this is probably just a much more sophisticated level. Like, because also Bourdain is so respected.
That's a show.
Like, he travels with the dude who owns the most expensive sushi restaurant, the one that's in Time Warner Center. That's like the most expensive restaurant in Manhattan or whatever. Like, he's like the foremost sushi chef like in the world or whatever. So he gets that level of access. But like I said, also like he's
out there.
Yeah, like so there's an episode he did about Mardi Gras where instead of being in New Orleans, he goes out into the country in Louisiana with like the Cajuns to do Mardi Gras with the crazy ass country ass white Cajuns, but then also goes and fucks with the black Creoles.
Black people, yeah,
yeah, at the same time.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's that. Or like when he did Charleston, he did, you know, he talked about how Charleston was changing, how people were discovering Charleston. Mm-hmm. Now there was this farm to table movement, but there's also like a select number of chefs who are going back to like the old days, like stone ground grits and, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like raising new kinds of rice and trying to really take it back. But he also always goes and fucks with the black people and talks about the connection to like Caribbean culture and Caribbean food and African food and, you know, all of that.
I'm really digging.
And it's worth watching. And it's really, every time I watch an episode, it just makes me sad that we lost a voice like his about world culture and celebrating world differences and how to embrace them and acknowledge them, especially at a time like this.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, did y'all watch Love Is?
No.
You watch it, bro?
No.
I know that nigga ain't.
All right, it was just in.
So, I can't front. The first episode was definitely in.
Right.
To me. You know, but, you know, I trust Mara. I trust Own. I trust, Celine. I guess he's directing. No, he's not directing. Mara's really directing. I don't think Celine's really that involved in this show because he was shooting something else.
Okay.
So as far as, like, directing and stuff. So I trust her wholeheartedly. The first episode was okay. It was basically, like, you know, the show is about their story. About their...
About how they met.
And how it turned into this thing. So Mara... character is like this, she's a hot girl, she's like working on a sitcom. I read her wiki, she worked on the Jamie Foxx show.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a, you know, she's working on a sitcom, she's making money, She's educated. You know, she's great looking. She got a she got a bunch of dudes she's fucking with. Like, yeah. She got a young dude. She got an old dude. She's popping. And Salim's character is not popping. He's right. Like, and he's like in his 30s. They're not kids.
Right.
They're both in their 30s. And he's trying to figure it out. He ain't got no money. Sleeping on his girl's couch, who he fucks with off and on. His mom is Loretta Devine, of course, mm-hmm, everybody's of course. Mom. You know, he calls her from a payphone because he's broke. Like, it's like, right. So then how they meet and stuff. So, but the first episode, I don't love the male lead. I don't know something about him. I'm not really loving. But again, it was episode one.
Right.
I'm not going to kill him. I think episode two comes on tonight. So
what I found interesting was some people said they didn't find the plot line believable, and I'm like, but it's actually
that's niggas.
Which is why they made a TV show out of it, because it's an unusual story.
Like, with a lot of own shows, at the end they do like a little, you know,
like a Q&A type thing of shit
with her.
Yeah,
with Mark. Sure. Even there's two characters that are older. That played Mara and Celine talking about themselves.
So somebody else said that they didn't find that flash forward. Either they said they didn't find it useful, or they said they didn't believe that they were supposed to be the same people or something. I saw some criticism of that.
But then there's talk to Mara for real, and she says like there's a restaurant that they go to for their first date, and they close it down. And she was like, yeah, that's the restaurant we actually really went to.
Right.
Like and there's a record furniture store. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, that's where we really met this.
Right,
so
right.
It really is like pieces of their story. So I'm going to give it another shot.
I'll DVR it and maybe like check it out.
Yeah, I want to just mention, we already talked about, you know, the goddess Maxine standing up for Trump, you know, and Trump got the right one, because there's no way she's backing down.
Mm-mm.
Or apologizing.
Mm-mm.
Or deviating from her goal. So, mm-mm, my man, you got an older black lady,
like,
you don't
tweet,
give a fuck.
His
good luck,
tweet
son.
Was enough to make me want to run up on him. Like talking about low IQ,
talk about be careful.
Talk about, but be careful, Max. Like, all night. Like, you're the rudest mother. Oh, yo, my God. I hate this motherfucker.
We got to talk about Justice for Junior.
Yeah. Tragic story. I will admit to having largely tuned out a lot of details about this story, because it's just too...
It's heinous.
Heinous. Yeah.
So, last week, I guess it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the 21st.
Yeah. Junior, I'm trying... You remember his real name, bro? His full name?
It's a little hard to pronounce.
Yeah, because they call him Junior so much that I don't want to...
Yeah, I think that was his...
That was like his nickname.
Nickname, yeah.
Lisando Guzman Feliz.
Yeah.
He was in a bodega on 183rd Street in Bathgate in Tremont section, which is not nice. And these guys come in the bodegas on film and drag him out of the store. He's 15. Drag him out of the store with machetes. I think this is like the bunch of Dominicans.
There's a Dominican gang that they...
Yeah, it was gang related.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, because the Dominicans are notorious for the machetes. You drag him out of the store and they basically fucking like hack the kid with the machetes, and because allegedly he had run a train on, was part of running a train on one of these guys' sisters.
And it was a case of mistaken identity, allegedly.
Yeah, I'm about to say. So come to find out, it wasn't him. He was a really nice kid.
Yeah.
It wasn't him. The leader of the gang, apparently, I think, Facebooked the mom, like, yo, we're sorry, we fucked up. It's the wrong kid. Obviously, too late. These guys dispersed. It became this massive story. They've since caught all eight of them. One of them was in the DR. He was gone. I'm actually shocked
that they went and got him?
That they found him.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, that he went to the DR and just didn't... Because, you know, that's the pipeline.
Right.
Like,
They might have had him under watch when he came through
customs.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the pipeline is uptown, and the Heights and all that is that when them guys get in trouble, they go in the first thing smoking,
right,
and they vanish in the island. They just don't come back.
Right.
So I was stunned that they actually found him. The one was like in Paterson, New Jersey.
Right. No, like five of them were.
Yeah,
because
there's a lot of Dominicans that live out in that Paterson area as well. It was one, I think, still in the Bronx or something. And so this became a huge story because, again, he was a really nice kid.
Wanted to be a cop, which I think made it bigger for some white people, obviously. Now the mayor is involved.
And what's horrible is all the people, all the kids that killed him were kids.
Yeah.
21, 21, 18, 21, 24. Like, they were young guys, too. Now their lives are ruined by their own doing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
on some gang shit.
God bless them when they get inside.
Right.
That's going to be crazy. Because I'm sure, first of all, they're going to split them up. So one going to Greenhaven, one going to Clinton. Like, they're not going to be together. Like these guys might not. They're going to probably get life sentences. And they probably not. They might not make it.
Well, the other thing.
This is tragical across
the other thing that's really sad about this is that people were saying that, you know, everybody in that bodega knew this kid his whole life, and they just
watched it.
Which, I mean,
but again,
I kind of understand, right? If it's a gang, if it's a neighborhood situation, it's kind of like, what you going to do with a bunch of motherfuckers with machetes?
Like, look,
but
you've lived around a bunch of Dominicans,
yeah,
and so have I.
Yeah.
The thing about the Dominicans is, for the most part, it's not like a lot of crime. Like, they're just loud. You know what I'm saying? They're loud. They're outside all night. They eat on the street. They play music like it's a fucking concert. But
there's not a lot of violence.
But they really police themselves. There's not a lot of violence. Like, there's not a lot of actual, like, hard body crime. So drugs.
There's a lot of drugs, but there's not a lot of violence. Drugs,
but you know, like, old ladies can walk the street at 3 in the morning. There's no issues. So, like, for this to happen, it's kind of almost shocking because this is really not how they get down.
Yeah.
I guess maybe this is the way the newer ones are getting down. But my point to all that was to say, if I'm in a bodega and I see 5, 6, 8, 7, 8 Dominicans coming with machetes, like, what I'm supposed to do?
Right.
Yeah.
Besides to say, yo, chill. But, like, what am I supposed to do?
And that's why I said I kind of get it. Like,
it's
what? Especially if you're not armed, if you're not. So, I was in a bodega in Harlem, my old bodega around the way. I was there after church, and I was all the way in the back, and I heard someone come in and say to the dude at the counter, like, yo, freeze, nigga, fuck, you know, whatever, whatever. And I was like, oh, Jesus, what the hell is happening right now? Like, I was really scared because I couldn't visibly see. It was a joke between the two of them. Like, they were playing with each other.
Yeah.
But because I could only hear it.
Yeah, you thought it was
like, I was really
off.
Like, but I was like ducked behind the Wise potato chips, be clear. Like, I wasn't trying to motherfucking.
You should be.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't trying to.
What was he gonna say, bro?
We all. Everyone operates with Monday morning quarterback syndrome.
Yes.
And everyone has the desire and has and everyone has this idea of how they would have reacted in these circumstances. It's the reason, you know, Mark Wahlberg says stupid shit like, I wish I was on that plane.
Right.
What Trump says, if I was there, I would have ran into the school in Florida.
Yeah,
right.
You know, it's for show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The reality is that more than likely, this bodega owner lives in that community.
Right.
And he sees these people every day.
Yes. And this is sort of the issue that we have with cooperating with police and sort of ridding our neighborhoods of crime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very difficult when you are still in the same vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, what is he supposed to do? Does he pull out a weapon and fire at these guys? So basically, that means store is done. You got to kill everybody.
Right.
They
you're also outnumbered.
But they still
want
to kill him now because he didn't do anything.
That's the thing.
They're on his neck now.
He's 6 foot. We have doesn't number, right? So because the idea is that this was a nice kid.
Right.
The idea is that, now look, most bodegas know their community.
Yes.
I don't know about anybody else in New York City, but I know growing up,
they
the
know
bodega,
you.
They know you, know you,
yeah,
know your
know
family,
you.
Your sister, all that. Ask about them in the store.
Because it's block.
Pay me
central,
next time.
Because it's, central to, it's central to the block. It's not even central to the neighborhood. Like,
it's
you have your block.
The hub.
You have your block
so,
bodega.
So I'm kind of like, you know, did he know him? Was it a kid he didn't know? Was he? I'm just saying it's very easy for us because in hindsight, we know the kid died.
Yeah.
And you would want to think that
somebody
a man, you know, who was an able-bodied man did not sit idle while a child was being hacked.
But he was being hacked by, like, eight niggas. That's the whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's this expectation that everyone is going to turn into Jason Statham or The Rock or some shit. Real. And it's not, because guess what, man? That man has a family too. He doesn't know what the fuck is going on. Well, let me not say he doesn't know, but in most cases, people don't really understand what the fuck is happening.
Yeah.
People come marching in your store. You definitely are like, yo, get it out of here. I've seen that happen where dudes will be getting chased and they'll run into a bodega. And yo, bodega's like, nah, get the fuck out of here. Not in here.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a horrible story.
It's terrible. And huge. I want to say, and I don't even know how to word this properly, but this shit feels a little exploitive.
Oh, no question. 100%.
Not a little.
100%.
And, you know, you don't have to do everything on social media. You genuinely don't have to do everything on social media. And I think that when you are going to pay condolences,
Just go,
man.
You got to put on your gram to show you were there.
It's like it comes off. And I get it. I get that a lot of people live their life in this way. And so everything is for public consumption. Yep. Everything is for, you know, the public to see. But like, it really is okay to simply go.
Yeah.
Pay your respects.
Yep.
Get back in your car and keep it moving.
Yeah. I agree with you. Real quick, Dame Dash was caught on film going at Lee Daniels for a payment of $2 million that he has not received for putting money up for the movie The Woodsman.
Right.
Dame has, it's come up, Dame has filed a lawsuit today.
This is the second one.
$5 million. To Lee Daniels and Lee Daniels Entertainment to pay monetary damages, an amount to be determined at trial, but estimated at no less than $5 million, which I'm assuming must be interest on top of the $2 million. Well, guess what, other things, and issue producer credits and ownership rights to the movie, The Woodsman. We'll see.
This is where everything gets tricky. It is completely murky with this.
Right.
So initially, he put up, from what I understand, initially put up $2 million. Mm-hmm. The movie, I think the movie did like $1.6
million. It did not do $2 million.
It was critically acclaimed.
Yes.
It was not a commercial success.
No.
It seemed as though Dane was under the impression that when he did not get that money back, that it would roll over into sort of Lee's next project,
right?
Like I would sort of be, which was Precious, right? Now, at that time, Lee had gotten Oprah and Tyler Perry and all of these other, you know, sort of strong producers. And I don't think that, I think he sort of checked out on that. And so where it gets dicey is that, was this a loan?
Or an investment.
Or an investment.
Dame's stance, as you've seen and heard many times, is that it was a loan.
Okay.
Now, we'll see in the court.
Well, no. He took him to court for that.
And you haven't paid me back.
No, he took him to court for that. He initially sued Lee for $25 million.
All right.
They came to a settlement in 2015.
Okay.
Maybe
Lee hasn't paid the settlement then.
Let me tell you. That settlement, from what I understand, both parties agreed that Dame would get credit as an EP on the next film.
Right.
And he would then, I believe it said he would get his $2 million back and a 5% profit split.
But Lee was also supposed to be producing something for Dame.
It wasn't supposed to be for Dame. From what I read, it was a Richard Pryor biopic that Lee was supposed to be at the helm of.
Okay, and that fell apart.
It fell apart, which biopics often fall apart.
They've been trying to make Richard's movie for years.
Movies fall apart all the time. They go by the wayside all the time. Mm-hmm. So, that was the settlement.
Right.
The movie fell apart.
So Lee was like, whatever.
So Lee was like, and his lawyers are probably saying, then you are not obligated to move forward until, unless that movie picks up, because this was a part of your settlement. Right. Lee then started doing television. Lee hasn't done a movie since The Butler, which might have been around 2015, 14. Yeah. So he's been doing small screen stuff.
Been doing
I don't know how that settlement was structured, but from what I read, from what I was able to find, that it looked as though that was their settlement. They agreed upon that. Dane was happy with that. He then posted, we settled this.
Right.
I don't want to, you know, we're not going to go back and forth. And then when the movie fell apart, it was kind of like, yo, yeah, like basically like you reneged on me.
Right. And I mean, here's the thing. Lee definitely like took advantage of the technicality there. For sure, because like you said, the movie fell apart and that was part of the agreement. Because if he had wanted to be on some upstanding shit, he could have been like, I still gotta pay you. Let me tell you what's happening from my point of view. Dame has no friends left in his business. He has burned every bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, spectacularly, like thrown massive bombs at him. He's also fucked off a lot of other people's money over the years.
This is true.
There came a point, there was a point when Dame could basically sell a bridge to niggas. Like, listen, you want this lake right here? I got it for you. Give me this money. Let's get it popping. Whatever. Because he had a lot of ventures. He had a lot of ventures. None of them that didn't have Jay attached were successful. And this loan...
Well, Rachel Roy did all right, didn't it?
Yeah, but you can't really give him credit for that.
Well, he did it, whatever.
I mean, but it's her town. Whatever. So, anyway...
He's back.
But I mean, but he's not part of Rachel Roy anymore.
No, not anymore.
Right. So, but that also came at a point where he was still kind of Jay affiliated. It started at a point where he was still kind of Jay affiliated. But at any rate, what I remember is that when The Woodsman was coming out, Dame was calling it his movie. Dame was acting like he was in the movie game now, production, blah, 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 blah.
Well,
that
know,
to me,
niggas do what they do.
But that to me says investment. People invest in and lose money on movies every fucking day. It's part of the game.
Well, see, I just think it's semantics, because if I loan you $2 million to make a movie, that loan is now become an investment.
True, but if I loan you $2 million If I loan you $2 million and you make a movie, here's the thing. If I loan you $2 million and you make a movie, I'm not entitled to credits. I'm not entitled to back end. I'm not entitled to nothing unless it's part of the deal. You're just giving me my money back. Dame asking for credits and part payment and all this other shit, that's investment speak.
Let me just say, there is...
We are definitely on two sides of the fence on this.
Well, let me say this. There is a artful vagueness to people that operate like Dame.
Yes.
Right? And what that vagueness means is that...
He got room to break on niggas.
If I gave you $2 million...
Mm-hmm.
And this film went on to gross $100 million, mm-hmm. then I'm an investor.
Yeah.
And not only do I want my $2 million back.
I want a percentage.
I want my percentage back. I want my percentage also, right?
Well, yeah.
However, if this movie fails...
Then it was a loan.
Then it was a loan. And I would like all of my $2 million back. Right?
Dame is
an old street nigga.
Yes.
And old street niggas live by a certain code. I completely understand Dame's point of view. When you were jammed up, nigga, you came to me.
And I hooked you up.
And I don't for one second think that Dame blinked for that $2 million.
Right.
Lee probably came and talked to him on Monday, and that shit was wired by Thursday morning.
Mm.
Because the vehicle was worth, like, it had Kevin Bacon attached.
Yes,
like, it should have been.
It was, and Dame said, you know, he was, at that time, 2004, liquid, my nigga. Like, they are printing money at Rockefeller.
They're doing Armandale and all this other shit.
All
of
that shit.
Yeah.
So I completely get that.
Remember Armandale?
And, yes.
Sorry.
and I think that Dame is an old school honorable nigga. You shook my hand.
Yeah.
You took this money.
You told me you was gonna
You told
pay
me
back.
You would pay it back.
But also, right now, shit is tight for Dame.
Yeah,
and he needs
yeah,
that
but
shit.
Yeah, but he's been chasing. He ain't just start chasing Lee.
No, he's been chasing it for a long
now,
time.
And now,
Lee's on some, like I said, let me say this part.
Lee's definitely on some bullshit.
Lee's on some fuck nigga shit, because Lee been ducking and dodging his boy for years.
Can I say this? Can I say this? This is what happens when you get into a realm of lawyers and handlers, okay? Nobody
is giving you $2 million that they don't have to give you. Right. Okay? That my word shit, that shit work at the barbershop. Okay, that shit worked. That shit worked when you could put pressure on a nigga. That shit worked when you could run down on a nigga. That shit don't work in a court of law. Okay, you can do all of that.
But listen, though, my only issue is, and again, maybe Lee was being slick. But Lee basically said in the little shit that he owes him the money.
Yeah, Lee's gaming him, but that's why I started. This is what I was getting to when I said a minute ago that Dame has no friends left in the business. Lee is definitely gaming Dame, but part of the reason he's gaming Dame is because Lee knows that nobody he cares about is going to care about him fucking over Dame Dash right now. Like Dame doesn't matter anymore. This is like a little chihuahua nipping at. This is a little chihuahua nipping at your heels. Like, go ahead, little nigga. Like, damn, I don't fucking care. And again, it's wrong, but.
And again, you are talking to a person. Like, and then you know the other thing is as it presents when you watch that video, as black folks, especially black men. That is not threatening. There's nothing threatening about that video.
Dave's not trying to threaten.
Let me explain. When we watch that video,
white man.
If that video is posed in the deposition,
niggas is clutching pearls. White people are clutching pearls.
White men are looking at that with a completely different lens.
Oh my God, he almost punched him out.
Because he could absolutely say, well, listen, I said that in duress.
Yeah.
He was being aggressive. Now, we know. That
That's
he wasn't
Dame
being
Dame.
Aggressive. That was a black man talking with his hands. That shit ain't nothing new to. But he was not being at all over the top.
Yeah.
He was and honestly, for us, he was pleading with him, like, yeah. "Yo, where's my fucking money? But like, why are you fucking me off now?" Diana Ross in the background.
Diana Ross in the background now, is funny.
We gotta really think about this, man, because. Yo, man, like, this shit happens. Like, no one is paying you $2 million that they are not obligated to pay you.
Yeah.
Nobody, my nigga. All no, right. It's niggas out here that ain't paying you $100.
And Lee is giving him to call my office and let's talk about that's it. Lee still ain't gonna pick up the phone.
I think he's already countersuing him.
Right.
On this. Like,
well,
this
I mean,
is
I
not.
I think it's counseling based on GP.
But my point is, he's gonna try to stall him out. I think he's
gonna try to lawyer him out.
He might.
He's gonna try to drag it out until Zane gets tired and lets it go.
He might.
But Zane don't let go of shit, so.
All I want to do is see what happened in the coat. I'm not saying that.
We're not disagreeing with you, Jeff.
I think that this is one of those instances where I think that there was a, not a level of misunderstanding, but I think that there is some disingenuousness on both parties.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they two slick street niggas.
That's all.
Street nigga from Philly.
That's all.
Dame street nigga from Harlem.
A lot of this really in a different scenario if Dame wasn't broke would be chalked up to the game's the game. I think what Dame really wants is a piece of...
I don't know if you chalk up $2 million to the game.
But
$2 million, $2 million.
But if you lose $2 million in an investment, that shit happens. Yeah. But what it happens is the Woodsman and all that happened right about the time that business tide started to turn for Dame. But also Dame looks at Lee, and Lee is so big now, and he's not giving Dame a piece. I think what Dame is really mad about is not just $2 million, but like, nigga, I helped you get on.
That's the thing.
And you ain't even trying to hook me up with the big shit. Because Dame is on the outside now, and he's like, you could have me in the inside.
Exactly. And my two mil, nigga, helped you. Mm-hmm. Without my $2 million, nigga, there is no precious
right.
or butler
and one of
or
things
empire
he said
or
was,
any of that
you
shit.
Ain't even invite me to the precious shit. Like, you ain't even, so Dame is kind of like, how dare
he absolutely sort of checked out on that relationship. And listen, this is a part of what happens in investments. These niggas are not your friends.
Right.
All right, well, listen, Dame, I got your back. I hope you get your
I don't... no one's saying Dame is absolutely wrong here. No
you're
one
saying
is saying that.
Part of the game.
I'm saying that when your I's are not dotted and your T's are not crossed, because guess what, nigga? You was going to have to sign a personal note for me saying that this was a motherfucker loan. I was guaranteed my money back when there was going to be payouts, okay? And if not, nigga, we was absolutely coming for that crib. You'd be living in a hotel, nigga, if it was me. I'll tell you that shit right now.
Let's wrap it up with the BET Awards.
Okay.
So the BET Awards was Sunday past. Mm-hmm. I was in California, but I didn't go to the show. I watched on the TV like everybody else. I had a good weekend.
The nigga said on the TV.
I had a good weekend. I had a couple good memes. I really went out there with memes, a couple artists. I'm looking to sign, so I had memes with them, which were very positive. Went to a couple events. Hung out with you remember O'Neal?
Yeah, O'Neal McKnight.
Hung out with O'Neal all weekend.
O'Neal's like Jewish now and shit.
Yeah, so he converted
for his wife.
Yeah.
His kid is wild cute though.
He wears a Star David necklace and everything. So Friday night he had a little dinner gathering in the back. It's a restaurant called Ago. It's right from Melrose. He had a little damn private room. It's me, him, Kenny Burns.
Of course. Lifestyle niggas.
Me, Kenny Burns, this other cat who I met that night was
because that's what O'Neal. If y'all were like, who is O'Neal McKnight? He's a lifestyle nigga. Guy. He's been in a little bit of everything. You know, seen him on TV. You know, seen him in a video. You know, seen him in some other shit. Yeah. But he's a lifestyle nigga.
Exactly. Damn. And then a bunch of
he was a stylist for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Then apparently this white cat, Russian cat, who used to be Andre's driver.
Oh.
And now he's a grown man, and they're still friends, and. So he invited all his peoples. So the joint got flooded with Russians.
Oh shit! Live.
Gang of money. They just whatever you want. Young Russian cats out there doing whatever young Russian cats do.
Right.
In LA. Right. I ain't ask no questions.
Right. Right.
I met two dudes named Igor. Literally. I met a dude. Hey, my name is Igor. 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
Hey, man, how you doing? Jeff Igor. I said, this guy's name is Igor, too. He said, yeah, we all Russians.
Yeah, I love it.
So, yeah, it was cool. That was a good night. Then that was Friday. Saturday night, Kenny and O'Neal do a once-a-month party in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Kenny was out there. He flies out there just to do the party.
Right.
So we did the party, which I actually enjoyed because it was like L.A. people.
Okay.
It wasn't a BET party.
Right. LA it was just an L.A. party, yeah.
You know, it was a few.
During BET weekend.
Big Les was there and a couple of people. But it was like a L.A. So I got to see the vibe of like real L.A. blacks.
How was that?
They was partying.
But was it like some Hollywood shit?
No. It was like some gangbangers. Like, it was like, you know, some old niggas in all red. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Because I got to say, I've never just partied in L.A. unless there was like a bunch of New York.
Yeah, it wasn't no New Yorkers in there. Like, me, Big Laz, a couple other people. It was some L.A. people. And, you know, Kenny's on the mic doing that Kenny shit.
Yeah.
And then Sunday night, Atlantic had a dinner, and then Marcus Pitts' party, which was popping.
Yeah.
Marcus Pitts' party. I just wanted to tell everybody about my weekend.
Well, so. Thank you, Jeff.
Just for the
Were you there, Sean?
No.
Bro, I wasn't out there. Mona was there. Friday...
Culture Creators.
Yeah,
which is so proud of Joy. I'm really proud
it's
of Joy.
It's like it's in the Beverly Hilton now.
That's crazy. I saw that it was like a real joint with a dais and
a podium and like a whole and shit.
Yeah, like, I saw that. And like monitors and screens and shit.
300, 400 people there.
Dope.
It was like, I was like the ballroom was flooded.
Very, very dope.
Yeah, from that little, you know, Mr. C's penthouse to that in 2 years. It was crazy. What's his name? Barris.
Kenya
Barris won. They gave him an award.
Jamel
Hill got an award. Sylvia got like a lifetime award. Jesus Christ, I'm blanking on other people, but like really good people were there. Forgive me for the other people who I'm just totally blanking out on, but everybody was like a really quality person. I was there.
Right.
The dinner's great. I mean, the lunch was actually great. It was great seeing a lot of people. You see everybody. And that was fun. But the BET Awards in and of it, I never left Beverly Hills the whole weekend.
Right.
Except once.
And for those who don't know, the BET Awards, everything happens in downtown LA.
Downtown.
Yeah.
Which
is annoying to get to.
That's why I didn't go. Right. The only time I left Beverly Hills was one of the artists I'm looking at had a showcase. That was on Monday.
The
whole weekend, I was I'm like,
well,
I'm
if you're just going to hit spots, that's all you need to do.
I don't want
to
go downtown. Like, for what?
Yeah.
Like, for what? To go stand in the hot sun and watch.
Well,
like,
not even any of the after niggas. Parties are downtown. Like, literally, you're just down there for the festivities.
That's what I'm saying. Then you got to fight your way back up. So, yeah. I'm like, I'm going to let your niggas fight. I'm going to be right here when y'all get
right,
back.
Right, right.
But the show, let's talk about the show in and of itself. I thought it was the worst show they've
ever
done so far, as up to date. It was the we talked about this earlier, like,
it was
off air,
awkward,
but they're
it was
not
disorganized.
Getting any star power anymore. Mm-mm. Like, you know, back in, you know, 2009, 2010, like that, those first four or five roles, man, was like who's who in Black America across the board, not
right.
just entertainment, but it would be like big people from corporate America,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you know, it'd be like you know, like a pilot, you know,
yeah,
what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
it would be like a lot of big. You know, people, Black people doing big things. It was like the place to be.
And this was really random.
And
shit.
Now this year is Red Grant.
Like,
Red Grant was on TV more than Jamie Foxx.
Right.
And Smitty.
I leave my man Smitty.
Oh, I love Smitty, but come on, Smitty. You don't deserve that much goddamn
right.
time.
Smitty was in the front row at one time.
Bro. Like.
Like, for, like you got to trip over his feet to get to the stage. And so, like, they're not getting that star power from the audience anymore,
and the show's just
star
not good.
They're not getting star power from the art, from the performance.
Yeah,
because you know, over the years, you know, we've had everybody: Michael,
yeah.
Prince, Janet,
yeah.
Beyonce, Rihanna, like
yeah.
everybody, big Kendrick, you know, Drake. Everybody's performed on that show at some point, but now. It's really, I look at it, it was almost like watching the BET Hip Hop Awards.
Well, that's what I felt about last year, too. It felt like the BET Hip Hop Awards to me. So, here's the thing. Before last year, so the year before that was the year that, like, Jesse got his award and did the magical Negro speech and everything. Mm-hmm. Right up until that show, which was Stephen Hill's last show,
yeah.
I had been walking away from the awards, especially in those last 4 or 5 years, especially once Viacom did a whole Viacom wide push and they expanded it into BET Experience Weekend. Mm-hmm. Every year I walked away being like, BET stepped it up again. BET stepped it up again. BET
stepped
it up again.
Frankie Beverly got the Lifetime Achievement.
No, that was a while ago, I feel like. Frankie Beverly was, who got the Lifetime Achievement?
Was that Charlie Wilson?
That was a while ago, too.
Justin Timberlake in America.
That was a while ago, too.
Yeah, that was.
I'm trying to remember who got.
3 years ago.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember. Oh, I think. No, Luke was last year. Or was that the Hip Hop Awards?
Luke was Hip Hop Awards.
Okay, well, I don't
remember. You're not giving Luke no
beat. I don't. Oh, no, that was Smokey.
Oh, Smokey was good, too.
It was Smokey.
Yeah.
So, it was Smokey. So, I would walk away being like, this was really good. And BET, and aside from, like, sound issues and shit, every year I would be more and more impressed, like, BET is doing this thing. Last year was the first year I was like, my nigga, mm-hmm. what the fuck? Like, it just, and it was the same problem with me for this year. The show was not cohesive, right?
Oh.
Because the performances, with the exception of one, were good. But Jamie was awful. It's like because it was Jamie, I really feel like they were just like everything about it was awful. Like somebody had posted a clip of when Monique hosted the show and she opened doing like the big girls version of Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
Like that energy from the energy has to be up from the door. And I felt like the shit Jamie came in on, like, I don't know that song. I don't know that rapper. I don't know what the fuck. Your whole monologue is about Black Panther. My nigga,
yeah.
This ain't the Black Panther Awards.
What? And you winging it, and it gets like the Black Panther thing was a perfect example because 5 years ago, that whole cast would have been at that show.
True.
Mm-hmm.
True.
That whole Chadwick, all
three years ago,
all the women, Angela
yeah.
Bassett, they all Forest Whitaker, they
all
would have
been
there in mass.
Yeah.
This year, and then you know Michael B. Jordan's a big star. It's no disrespect to him, but like
right.
it was that. That was it.
He was in L.A.
He happened to be there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like it's like that was it, and then he gets dragged on stage with Jamie doing that shit. Like just come say your one line.
Like the
what
speech.
Are we doing?
And also
man?
The fact, Jamie, that you think that it's so important to say that line. At the BET Awards, when that line is problematic as hell.
And at the beginning
like,
of the show.
At the beginning
like
of the show, he's like, it's the most important thing. It's so important for this week. And it's like, nigga, sit down.
Come see your line.
And Jamie is...
and you said Michael B. Jordan was kind of like...
Come to that dance for your mom.
Somebody said it was like... Somebody said Michael said that line like Lil' Kid said that Easter speech
yeah,
was
because,
exactly
because
that. Was exactly
I think
that.
At first, Michael B. Jordan was kind of like, well, which line is you talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah.
I was in the whole movie.
Like the whole entire
like,
movie.
Like, which move? Which line?
Yeah. Like hey, auntie, like, which one you want
yeah,
me to
so, so yeah, so I'm saying, like, and then he pulls Donald Glover up there.
That was awkward.
Again, Donald Glover's like, nigga, like,
and
really?
Makes Donald Glover talk like you wanted to shout some people
and
out,
sing.
Like.
Like he, and he actually, he just did the whole kind of bit on the, you know, mocking it, making fun of the video. Then you bring him up here to kind of do it again.
Right. And also, like, you start talking about, well, he wasn't making fun of the video. He was praising the video.
Yeah, he's praising
but,
it.
But
yeah,
the funny thing
I mean,
is, like,
it was reenacting.
He was talking about the video, but the song wasn't This Is America. It was the other joint Donald Glover has out. So that was the other thing that was confusing. Like, don't.
This Is America.
Huh?
He's talking about This Is America.
He was talking about the This Is America video, but that song is another song that Donald has out. It's a like a summertime jam.
The other, you're talking about the one that he played on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. That's the song that Jamie was singing. That, yeah, 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 yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's This Is America.
That's This America? America.
Yeah, oh, that's whatever. The beginning. No,
okay.
No, but we just want to party. Party
okay, okay.
But my point is, it was just like you said, Jamie, it felt like Jamie didn't go to rehearsal. It was a song.
I feel like Jamie focused on the skits. Even the skits
the
weren't that good.
Was
the
terrible.
One, like when we got to Wanda, I was like, nigga, I gotta go.
Wanda
like,
shit was
oh my God. I feel like Jamie did. Focused on the skits. I feel like they told him, do whatever you want to do, your Jamie Foxx. I feel like he thought it was going to be light work. And he was like, I'm just going to rip off the audience. I'm just going to do whatever.
And the audience not giving him nothing back.
And then he
either.
Clearly kept going off prompter because he kept commenting on the fact, like, there's something on the prompter. I'm supposed to read it. Clearly,
yeah.
He thought I could do better by myself.
And
then we get to
the timing of the show.
Like,
severely. Because he's going over and then.
Yeah, and just doing whatever
he
wants to.
Todd Tribbett. You know, little crazy ass.
Yeah.
When the gossip thing was
yeah.
Snoop.
Yeah.
Because
like,
I think
because they were going over
time.
Yeah, because Jamie kept saying, I just need to acknowledge. Like, you giving special acknowledgements to niggas that ain't supposed to be getting special acknowledgements, and you giving speeches about shit, and like all kind of other. Like, you did a whole moment about Donald. Like, he was talking about Donald for like 3 minutes, and then pulled Donald up on the stage for like
so
another 3 minutes. Like, it's just too much.
Dude.
Then the Anita Baker joint. Anita's face. While Jamie was going on and on, she was like, I
yeah,
know
because
this
I think he
she was like, I know
one.
This ain't my goddamn tribute.
I feel like he's supposed to
I feel like somebody must have pulled
I
out.
I about 5 minutes, man.
He somebody must have pulled out, because Anita's face was like, I know this ain't my tribute.
I don't even know if somebody pulled out as much as, I don't, you know.
This nigga makes everything about him?
Well, they probably couldn't get anybody.
True, because
you know
Layla was at Hampton Jazz Fest, because I was
and,
definitely
and,
like, where
you know,
is Layla?
They use Layla, I love them, but they use Layla and Lettucey.
But Layla did Angel. They have to use Layla for
Lettucey
and Marsha.
Yeah.
Every tribute, Yolanda has come out there.
Yolanda did the best though.
Oh, she's
but,
great.
I mean,
she's an amazing
think,
talent. But like, they use the same.
I was wondering why they have a Braxton up in there somewhere. Like,
the show, God bless them. It reeked of people who had never really. It felt like this was the first time someone produced this show.
Mm. Which is not the case, because isn't it? Jesse, what's his name?
Yeah, but I think this felt like what was the scene in Boomerang when Marcus said, it's you the man.
Oh, you
yeah.
Can
you
got it.
Do what you want.
And then it came back with Afterbirth.
Yeah.
Afterbirth.
That's what it felt like.
That's
yeah.
What it felt like. Like, we just gonna let you do what you want to do. And
yeah.
It's like, hey, guys, talent still needs direction.
Yes.
Because they need to have that structure. And this is why, right? Like, because you have to hit people with jokes. I get it that you want people to be timely, but people never got into a rhythm of the show. The audience
mm-hmm.
never got into a rhythm
Not
of the
never.
Show. And you know, also too, you guys, it's a very long day.
So
when
long
people go to those
shows, I was like, I'm not going down there.
You know,
and
a
it
lot
was
of
awkward
people,
from the pre-show, not for.
Well, that's what I'm getting ready to say. So, so a lot of the people that are in the regular sort of folks that are up in the balcony, like the regular people, like. They're out there from like fucking like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Sometimes earlier.
You know, yeah.
It's hot as
and
fuck.
And then,
hot as fuck.
You know, there was no star power. So I think that there was a big letdown in the room.
Yeah.
And I was
like,
a little disappointed. And I'm going to say this too, because there was a time when BET Awards and niggas were showing up in them big ass nightgown white tees and Air Force Ones and headbands and shit. And then we kind of got out of that.
Yeah,
and I think
I started putting little Dutch
it
on.
Was, it,
yeah.
Was, it was like niggas was suited and booted
yeah.
And it was clean and it felt prestigious. It
yeah.
Felt
yeah.
Like something
you know
special.
What? I might meet Oprah tonight.
It felt special.
I just might. I'm
and
like,
then,
I might
then
might
and
know?
It felt like this year was
let me give
regression.
A look.
Yeah, because
yeah.
I felt like the BET Hip Hop Awards was included in the audience.
You couldn't. You and I'm looking at Jamie and I'm like, bro, like you got like on jeans and
yeah,
the jacket, like
and
you're
and
gonna
a jacket
have to
and a white tee
all day today,
yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, look, you ain't gotta wear a tux, but then nigga put a jacket on,
yeah,
put a suit
right.
On
yeah,
something.
You
know what I'm saying? Like,
he looked like
right.
He was going to the store.
It felt like I always said, these award shows always feel like they pulling niggas out the lobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like last minute, and yo, let's do this. The performances, it was choppy. You start off, listen, no shots at J. Cole. God bless him. Okay, he is not somebody I'm starting a fucking award show off with.
Right.
He's just not. Yeah. He's not. Yeah. He's not that dude. And
he's not exciting like that.
He's
to start
not.
Show.
Yeah.
Not to start a show.
But nigga, there wasn't a super high energy. Well except Janelle.
Then
there
I have to say, but then I also have to say, like, okay, guys, the number one R&B record is that booed
up. They gave her the emerging artist stage.
And I'm saying to myself, like, did nobody process that? Like, this was your moment for your gifts.
Yeah.
This was the moment where you got all the entertainers singing that shit, waving their hands, doing everything, and you guys fucking blew it. Like, you
might
blew
have started
it.
The show with her just because the song is so
the
high.
Song yeah. is it, like
yeah, just because the song is on fire, everybody would have got into the record.
It felt it felt like, you know, usually the BET would be a marriage of old and new. And it felt like a lot of old niggas.
Yeah. Well, no, it felt like old niggas running shit, but there was nothing for the older people in that audience except for the Anita part. And they didn't even really do the gospel for real to real this time. They incorporated Snoop into the gospel.
No, but then you put then you got Jamie telling the crowd, you know, to sing with the Anita song. And I'm like, Jamie, these niggas are 23 years old. They don't they were literally babies.
Right. Yeah. And Anita definitely got up there like, I'm going to need y'all to do better.
Yo.
In her grandma voice. Yeah. And listen, babies. I'm proud of all y'all.
Thank you.
And
but
I think
it literally
that,
was like, we need to see more than what we saw.
And I just felt like, they have to figure out what they are.
Yeah.
Right? And they have to focus on what they are. And are you guys an award show with some performances? Or are you a performance show
with a couple of awards?
Like, you guys got the social justice folks out there. You're giving them awards. There's this week. It's like, you guys could do an hour special with, just focusing in on those folks. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted to give Deborah Lee her flowers, in which she deserves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think it felt a little weird for her to get that award.
I mean, I get it. The BET Awards is her baby, but that felt like something more appropriate for, like, BET Honors.
I was going to say, that felt like that should have been, like, to me, because I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, how long she has done this. I think she... I think she gets her fair share of criticism, and I think that it's, you know, understandable. But, like, I think that people are also, like, a little super harsh on her. And I don't think people really know her story.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I don't think people really know her story.
Yeah.
And it would be great to see her honored in a way.
Like the Kathy Hughes special on TV.
Yes. Really. Yeah. Like, to really show that story.
I feel like, and I guess it's not this season is going to come until the fall, but, like, you know, I know y'all always joke on me and shit about the shows or whatever, but, like, when I watch, like, the NAACP Awards or whatever, like, I feel like a couple of those shows, especially NAACP Awards, have kind of started to eat BET Awards lunch. Like, they're getting Oprah and Tyler Perry and the cast
of
Black
Panther because
Ava DuVernay.
Because they're upping production value and because they're focusing so much on a film and TV space where... Black.
Can I also,
and also Cats is to your point, and people come in there suited and booted. And ain't no niggas in there walking with no Tim's on. Everybody's fresh. It's like a thing.
It is also
incredibly important because these organizations cultivate relationships all year long. They have galas all year long.
True.
They have fundraisers all year long. They show up. The people who are producing the show up to those people's shit.
Yeah, you're right.
And that is why and how you, like, to me, you know why Layla doesn't show up for Anita's shit? Not just because it's a paid date, but I can all but guarantee you, if Stephen Hill was involved, she would have been there.
Yeah. Right.
Because he would have known back in fucking January
that we
about to do this, so we finna block all that out.
Yeah,
don't take none of them dates.
Yeah.
Don't take none of them dates.
Yeah. Here goes some money to get in trouble.
Right. Here's the other thing I think I want to say. I believe that BET expanding into the BET experience is actually starting to affect the award show.
I agree 100%.
It's an exhausting weekend, and it's not a festival the way Essence is a festival.
No.
Like, there's not shit for you to go to during the day. It's not a family-oriented weekend. It's just a bunch of performances and parties and yeah. shit, and maybe like a celebrity basketball game. Yeah. Like, it's not a real culture. And I think
there's no reason for a family of for Clara, Janie, and Jackie to fly out there for right. the weekend, because it ain't gonna be laid out like yeah. Essence, where a bunch of shit to do. It's like, okay, we can go see Chris Brown and AJ from Once Upon a Pop Basketball,
right?
Or we could go down here and watch, you know, Nipsey Hussle
do whatever. But no, for real,
I love them. But, you know, and some other, you know, kind of artists
yeah.
Do it, the BT Experience. And
maybe, do the 106
and
Park stage.
LL Cool J.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I spent all this money for this?
Right. And when they first conceived it, and even... when they first conceived it, and the first year they did it, they were trying to make it a fuller experience. Like, there was a film festival
yeah,
element.
I remember there were panels.
Mm-hmm. They were trying to make it a full thing. And over the last few years, it's turned more into, we're going to put hottest, newest, latest, emerging acts on this side stage on, you know, Friday and Saturday yeah. and do this party over here and then pre-show and then the show. It's just become about a bunch of performances.
What
it's
are
just
you?
Where the performance splits
yeah,
it. So that's part of the problem, is that everybody has fatigue. The people who are there, I mean, you got fatigue by
plus,
Sunday. You like, what's all this shit?
Plus, to me, it's again, like you said, it's logistically, you know, crazy. We're going to wrap up in a second, but it's logistically crazy, too, because, you know, Staples Center is far from Beverly Hills, and, like,
yeah.
all the parties have happened most of the time in Beverly Hills, maybe a little bit of Hollywood. That's, like, far, and it's mad traffic. So,
mad
like you said,
traffic.
By the time you do all that shit, like, it's like, man, I'm going to my room.
Yeah,
man.
Last
tired,
time I went to
BET
Awards, when niggas was like, okay, let's go to Mark Pitt's party, I was like, all right, let me close my eyes for a second. I woke up the next day.
Yeah.
Because I was wiped out.
So, I mean, God bless them, man. You know, BET was already an important part of our culture. I want them to do well. They got to, like the exhibits yeah. leader said, they got to do better.
Stop saying it's because Viacom bought BET.
They got to do better.
It ain't got
and
shit
I, you
to
know,
do with it.
I'll wait till, you know, October, November and watch my NAACP awards uh-huh. and my gospel awards on the TV.
The Stellar Awards.
Yeah,
the Dove Awards.
And you know what? Please, sidebar, that we're going to wrap up. I don't want to see Ty Trippett no more.
Ty Trippett wants to be a secular artist.
Aching, I mean, he'd be cooning and facing and yelling and screaming. I don't know what he's doing.
The hippity hop gospel. I done told
he
you.
To be a
you better get
artist.
You some mighty clouds and some soul spirits, some five blind boys from Alabama
yeah.
and cut the shit, man.
Because yeah, I don't know what the hell Ty be doing.
Like, I was Ty's product manager for an album. He wants to be a secular artist on the low. Bless his heart.
On the low?
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So you got the haircut with the part down the side. Shit, boy, put your coat and tie on, boy. Sit down somewhere. So we're going to wrap
all that
up.
All howling in the sanctuary.
But I'm guessing we're not going to be here next week because the Wednesday is the 4th.
Yeah.
And then so. You go on Essence too, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see y'all the week after the 4th. Have
later.
A great holiday.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.